This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9. I'm Khoo Su Chuang, joined by Wong Shan Eng. Now, before we get to the order of business, I think the most important announcement I must make, Shan Eng, this morning, is that at the top of the table clash in that Premiership, Liverpool put 3 goals past Leicester City. I think that has to be mentioned.
Okay,
you know?
Whatever.
Not that I'm a Liverpool fan, but... You know,
all right, one, for one you say, football fans out there, this is the biggest news of the day.
It is a pretty big piece of news, yeah.
Okay. I'm excited for you, as you can hear from the sound of my voice.
And then the rest of the world goes on. How have you been, darling? All right.
I've been pretty good missing you, Chuang.
Yeah, I miss it. Likewise, darling. Likewise.
That's good to hear.
There's a lot of mutual affection going on this early in the morning, as has to be the case.
Well, what else do we have on later?
Well, this week we've got inflation. We've got, I think, the budget debate on the 25th. Is that right?
Yeah, it's Thursday? the next few days, actually.
Yeah, and who knows? The chips might fall again, French or otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, can everyone agree on this so-called unity budget? Big question mark.
Is it a unity budget in the first place?
Yeah. It will be, I think, the first time we've ever had to approach a budget on a multi-partisan level kind of a basis.
Yeah. I mean, I just to dwell on it for 10 seconds more. If it doesn't pass through, we might see another regime change. Is that what the implications are?
No, I mean, not, well, if you follow the Westminster system, which is based on UK, then yes, usually it's a no confidence thing.
It's
a sign of no confidence, but we don't know. This is kind of semi-uncharted territories for us.
Yeah, as has been the last literally 11 months. So
yes,
might as well add another variable in the equation. Why not?
But
right?
I mean, if you want to find out more, do listen to this conversation we had with Lim Wei Jet, the constitutional lawyer. And you can find that conversation on the BFM app on Spotify, where he tells you, goes into the weeds on this topic.
Goes into the weeds, where the best places are. Right, what else is on the agenda this morning from your perspective?
Well, I'll be talking about one of the nicest cities, but also one of the most expensive cities, which is San Francisco. And how they are trying to make things a little bit fairer by tax.
And from the Americas, I go to the Asias and I talk to yet another city, this time in South Korea and Seoul, where they are repurposing something for another. So don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Electric Light Orchestra with Mr. Blue Sky. Very ephemeral and atmospheric song, isn't it, Johnny?
Very.
Very, right? Orchestral?
I don't know. I like this band.
Quite
Electric
nice, right?
Light Orchestra.
Back in the day, they had these like anthemic tracks, 7 minutes, eight minutes long.
Almost like a movie soundtrack, you know? You almost imagine like either some race is going on or moon mission is landing. Isn't it? It's got like this
dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
And then it sets you up to a crescendo.
And then nothing happens.
Like life.
Tell you what, life is happening. Life in Seoul is apparently quite tough for the young and I think financially disadvantaged. You know what they're doing in Seoul, according to Reuters and the Financial Times and all the other media platforms? They're saying that they're reconverting hotels and I think offices into public housing. And they are doing that to instantly increase the supply of housing, affordable housing, for the disadvantaged. Initially, I thought that's a good idea, but then on reflection, if you're the asset owner of those properties, right, not going to get the kind of yields you want, right? But you know, because of COVID now, I think everything is accelerated, it's amplified. So much commercial real estate in KL is now empty. What are they going to do with it?
Well,
it might be a template, you know.
Yeah, and they're not the only ones actually, because there's another article here. And it seems that this is also the case very much in the US, and it's actually in California, another place where housing prices are just way above everybody's ability to afford anything, right? Because, you know, prices there have gone up crazy. So there's a program called Project Room Key, and it's somewhat similar, and it's an effort to temporarily house seniors and people who are medically vulnerable to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in these empty places also. Because, yeah, you can't have all these, like, homeless. Okay, there's a few things. One of those that are, you know, who can't afford it. Then there's those who desperately need it because they're homeless or they're not well or they're elderly. And I think, yeah, you have to really look at these empty spaces in your city. So clearly, California is one of them that's trying to address this issue. I don't know, like you say here, we are also going to see a lot of empty commercial spaces. The other scary thing is a lot of empty suburban malls are also going to be impacted.
100%, man. I read so many articles that in America, the death of the mall is a real and present issue in so many parts of the country there. And, you know, you know, if you've ever watched Stranger Things, you ever watched Stranger Things? Pretty cool series, right?
On Netflix.
On Netflix, lah, you know. Oh, by the way, I signed up for Apple TV Plus. It's not very good. No, seriously, it's not very good.
I think most of us have it because it's free, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're
because you have an Apple device.
Yeah.
You see, that is the microcosm of why all this is happening. It's the rich-poor divide. Poor people like me cannot afford Apple products, so that's why we have...
You have to pay a cent for it? But back to the topic, Trump. No, but it's true.
It's the rich-poor divide. It is.
But when you look at these empty buildings, and you're right, the malls, I think there's this article in Business Insider which points to how it's being used. And some of it is logistics, fulfillment, and distribution centres.
Which are these empty hotels and malls.
These empty malls, because rise of e-commerce, right?
Well, do you remember, I read earlier on in America as well, they're repurposing stadium, because like nobody was going to live events, sporting events, right? They were repurposing stadiums to keep unsold cars, unsold automotive inventory. Now that is insane, right? So 2021, people say it's going to recover, right? I don't know, okay? I mean, IATA says 3 or 4 years, probably, right? What's going to happen to all this? Decisions have to be made. Pivoting has to be decided
on. But it could be temporary. I mean, one really cute one was Zouk in Singapore, right? Which is the famous club. During the day, it has Soul Cycling, you know. In the
Soul Cycling?
Yeah. In the evening, it's a cinema. I mean, of course, they allow that in Singapore. And even here, we've had this conversation with Aquaria recently on the Breakfast Grill that was aired on Friday.
I wonder what's happening to Aquaria.
Yeah,
man,
so they
right?
are allowing, and you can hear that conversation on the BFM app on Spotify, and they are thinking of ways to repurpose their facilities. There's no choice because your fixed cost is still running.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they allowed, I think recently, Yuna, the singer, to have an event there. So more and more, I think, many business owners or, you know, these property owners will be forced to think about how they want to do it. But for me, if you think about it from the homelessness perspective, it's an ideal situation. If really no one is renting your building, why not? And apparently even before COVID-19, like in Washington, D.C., one mall, landmark mall, was converted into a shelter. So if the state can pay for it and pay some form of rent, why not?
At least the asset owner gets some income,
yeah,
you know.
Better than it being an empty space. So I think we will increasingly look at different models as to how to utilize all the empty, be it commercial or, as you say, concert halls or even aquariums, because there is a fixed cost to all these areas. You have to think about how to minimize it, right, your costs.
Correct. But there's a short-term implication to that, because what you might solve now in the immediate term, again, getting people off the streets, over the longer term, when retail and footfall returns, what are you going to do with the families and the people that live inside? Are you going to shove them out back onto the street? You can't, right?
You can't. You do need to think about a more medium to long-term strategic solution for these people.
Okay.
And also a wider conversation as to whether housing should be priced the way it is globally.
Absolutely. So clearly this is something for all you Malaysians to be feeding back on. The Twitter handle is @BFMRadio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was John Mayer with New Light. Before we continue, I must correct myself. A gross piece of misinformation that was proffered out to the general public a few minutes ago. I said that Liverpool beat Leicester City 3-0 in a top-of-the-table clash. I stand corrected because Roe has pointed out, quite rightly, that on goal difference, actually, Spurs is top of the table. So, Leicester is only fourth.
You probably created some heart attacks this morning,
poor
right?
Poor Spurs fans, I'm really sorry, but, you know, my team, Manchester United, is lying down in 10th. So,
10th?
Yeah. 10th, 10th.
What happened? Life happened. I'm not a big follower of football, but I didn't know they were that bad.
I know. Do you know what I mean, right?
Did I create a war on...
No. It's just life, you know. For 30 years, Liverpool was down there. Now we are down there. But it is what it is.
It is, you know.
As I cry into my tissues. Moving swiftly along, San Francisco is the topic of discussion. Apparently, the tech billionaires and the really poor in San Francisco have met head on. And it's actually, I mean, this is a Guardian article, right? And they point out that actually, cheek by jowl, the poor and the rich live very near, in close proximity. And that is just endemic of the problems in our country. Well, not in our world, actually. The rich-poor divide. It's a global issue.
But I think in San Francisco, it's probably magnified.
Pronounced,
right?
Yeah.
Because you've got, it's the home of all the, you know, the Silicon Valley,
yeah,
tech 100%, giants.
Yeah.
And it's also one of the places with the highest rates of homelessness, unemployment. So it's a very stark contrast, right? So I think the state is saying, how do we address this? And I suppose if somebody did a study on what is the Gini coefficient, you know, between the top 1% and the bottom 10%.
In San Fran specifically.
Yeah, it would be a very high figure, right? So they've come up with this, I would say, rather interesting tax law. And voters overwhelmingly backed it. So what will happen is that there will be an extra 0.1% on tax on companies that pay their CEOs more than 100 times that of the median of their workforce. And this surcharge actually increases by 0.1 percentage point for each factor of 100. Okay, this gets into the maths. But at the end of the day, up to a maximum of 0.6%.
Well, 0.1% tax on companies that pay their CEOs 100 times more than the lowest common denominator. It's a bit like asking a snowball to survive in hell. It's not going to make any kind of dent. It's like trying to plug a leak in the dam with your little finger. It's not going to do anything.
But it's a symbolism, isn't it? I guess they want.
Not really. Like, if you really wanted to tax the rich, if you really wanted to equalize everything, you would say you would legislate against it, right? You would say that if your top guy is 100 times paid more than the top bottom guy, then you pay 5% more, 3% more, 7% more. You don't make it 0.1%.
But I suppose San Francisco, I mean, they think that this new tax is just going to bring in, you're right, it's not going to, you know, move the needle that
much. It's not going to move the needle.
But I think from a tax revenue perspective, it's bringing in between 60 to 140 million US dollars a year. Now, they are going to use that for housing and healthcare provision for the city's poorest people. So on some level, I can see your point, Chuang, that so what? You know, for the rich, it doesn't make much difference. For the companies, it doesn't make much difference. And when you think about the tax collection, 60 to 140 isn't
nothing
a lot. Yeah. But if you're using it specifically for certain, certain parts or certain, I suppose, to fill certain voids for which this is housing and healthcare, then it's not a bad tax, you know, because you've got to start being imaginative about how tax is done. And this is something Malaysia we should consider, because tax collection as a percentage of our GDP is very low compared to, let's say, Singapore and Hong Kong. And this is at the top of my head trying to remember the number. If I'm not wrong, Singapore and Korea, they're like 18-19% of GDP. We are much lower at 11-12%. And you know, with our fiscal deficit, we really need to think about how we should kind of relook at our entire taxation system. So after a certain point, you know, you also don't want to inhibit capitalism or, you know, entrepreneurship where you overly tax people. So this is kind of the in-between, the trying to be clever but also not trying to slam down on what is effectively the Silicon Valley, which is one big pool of entrepreneurs, right?
No, you're right. I mean, California is where, you know, so many of the world's top tech companies are based. And you just look at the difference between America and Europe in terms of tech innovation in the last 20 years, right? What was it? The DAX used to be quite highly valued versus the NASDAQ. In the last 20 years, the NASDAQ, on an order of magnitude, hundreds of times maybe, right, is so much more valuable now than the DAX. And that's because of the tech boom. What are you going to do? You want Elon and Mark and, you know, Sergey and Larry. Not as if, first name basis, right?
You wish. We wish. We all wish.
Bill and Tim, do you know what I mean? To stick around in California. But
Bill is in the Windy City. No, he's not in California.
Bill is somewhere there, He's rich as all, you know, hell.
So, yeah, of course. But he's not in California. I remember that one.
So what are you going to do, right? What are you going to do? You want them to stick around and to create all those jobs. Because don't forget, in the last 10 months, Amazon has been one of the few big companies to be hiring. Everybody else has been letting go of people. Right?
Yeah, it's true. FANG stocks are
Right? So
they're the big employers today.
So maybe there should be a wealth tax, not of the companies per se, because, I mean, look at it, right?
Sorry, Bill's in Seattle. We've just been reminded.
So Seattle's in Washington, right?
Washington State.
Yeah, okay. So Elon Musk made $600 million in salary. Salary last year. Don't talk about his net worth appreciation, okay?
Which is based on share price.
Which is huge, right?
Yeah. Because the company actually doesn't make money. But that's another story for another day.
Exactly, right?
Which we will be talking about at 7:30 later on, actually.
And his cars crashed left and right. Yeah. But that's beside the point. So we should be taxing the rich. And that's what I think Nicolas Sarkozy tried to do in France. And then people left. Right?
And then what did Trump do? Trump lowered the tax.
And then, you know, people kind of came back and stuck around.
So what's the perfect tax balance? Because you don't want to crimp entrepreneurship, right? You don't want to crimp businesses from growing. But yet you know that there are social protection needs of populations that only increase with the rise of, you know, with COVID-19 and also this aging group. So what can we do? What's the right balance?
So to all the economists and philosophers and advice givers out there, please give us your feedback because this is something that affects everybody bar none. Okay, it's 6:25 in the morning. We'll come back after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Yeah, Yeah, Yes with Y Control. So if you're not already awake by now, you should be. Thanks to that guitar riff by the three bands of Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. No, just one band. I'm Chuang, joined by Xiaoning, and we are talking about who else but the orange-topped carrot head Donald Trump.
Oh, my goodness.
I can say that now because he's, in 2 months' time, he will no longer be the prime president of America.
On the 20th of January at
On
noon.
On the 20th of January at noon.
Yes.
Where everybody is counting down.
But he's not sure.
He's not. Well, no, he is himself not unilaterally
sure, yeah.
Not sure. Because in the classic case of eating more sour grapes than he deserves and should have, he has been mounting all these legal suits against the legal system in America for saying that he actually won the election, but common sense apparently is prevailing in the 50 states.
Yeah, fortunately, because a federal judge in Pennsylvania has dismissed a lawsuit by the Trump campaign seeking to block the certification of results in the state. Now, the judge himself is a conservative. He described the suit as shoddy, without evidence, and contrary to the U.S. Constitution. So Trump's legal team, led by Rudy Giuliani, has said that they will pursue an appeal to the Supreme Court. Now, meanwhile, three battleground states are expected to certify their results this week. This includes Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Nevada, which were all won by Joe Biden. It hasn't stopped Mr. President Trump, though, from continuing to tweet about allegations of electoral fraud, despite no evidence to back his claims.
Yeah, of course, we saw the elections on November 3rd, and since then, Trump has launched an attempt to cling to power unseen before in U.S. history. He's gone so far as to urge state lawmakers to disregard the results and unilaterally declare the election for him. What is the fella smoking, I tell you?
I don't know.
I'd like some.
He's creating actually quite a dangerous precedent.
He has.
No president in history has been, honestly, been so ungracious about losing.
Even
whether it was Carter, whether
even
it
Najib
was...
Najib was more gracious than Donald Trump. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean, right?
Yes. Normally, this is the funny part. There are actually no hard and fast rules in the US as to how a president takes over, right? How president-elect takes over
the
White
transition.
House. Yeah, but there's a somewhat kind of a accepted behavior. And typically what happens is that the minute, you know, the president-elect is kind of known, the incumbent will be like, oh, you know, either graciously accepting the new guy and saying that, oh, we're going to do whatever it takes. The transition will be a smooth one. He'll be invited to the White House tomorrow. All the staff have been informed. All the documents are going to be prepared. So that's going to be an easy transition. And apparently American presidents have learned from the past, because during the transition between, I think it was Bush Senior to Bill Clinton, it wasn't so smooth. And as a result, they say, oh, that started like the beginnings of 9-1-1, you know. So ever since then, they're like, okay, we should have more documentation in place, right? We should allow the incumbent, I mean, the elect, to come into the White House even sooner. But this guy is just making everything really difficult. And when you consider it's COVID-19, right? The cases are almost close to what? To 200,000 a day in the US?
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, they're just servants of the people, right?
Yeah.
And they should always, above and beyond, put the country first and foremost. But in this case, it's the ego and the relinquishing of power, which is difficult for him. And it's sad to see. And it's no surprise that I think it was Chris Christie, the former Republican governor of New Jersey. He called this a national embarrassment. It is. But that hasn't stopped Donald Trump's bestie. Who's his bestie?
Putin.
Vladimir Putin to say,
yes.
I don't recognize Joe Biden either.
I think he's got one other person that's on his camp, the Brazilian president, Bolsonaro.
Bolsonaro. And then Bolsonaro has got his own issues as well.
Yes.
But there's the other thing also over the weekend, G20 leaders held a virtual summit hosted by the Saudis. Trump did attend, but in between golf sessions. It's not
he
surprising.
Still has time for golf. Yeah, that was the first thing he did after he lost.
Right.
His first kind of public appearance, played golf. He's got all his priorities right.
Of course. And of course, the G20 leaders promised to ensure equality in the race to vaccinate people against the coronavirus. And that, I think quite rightly, should be top of the agenda.
But guess what?
But guess what?
Trump didn't say anything about the virus, about the vaccine, about granting equal access to the American vaccine by the rest of the world.
Did he underline electoral fraud and his rightful place as the
fake news, fake news, all fake news, fake news.
Incredible, incredible. Likely in 2 months' time, when we see the back of Mr. Trump, there'll be fireworks and celebrations going on. Okay, very quickly, Singapore and Hong Kong have postponed their air travel bubble for 2 weeks. Apparently, they were supposed to start yesterday.
Yes.
But couldn't because Hong Kong reported a spike in new cases, up to 43 from 26. Wow, compared to Malaysia. Malaysia yesterday were over 1,000, right?
Yeah, 1,000.
We had a little drop to 600 plus, and then we went back up again.
Yeah, over 1,000, sadly. I think getting
1,021 or something.
Flattening the pandemic curve is really, you know, beginning to be. I think we are making progress, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. And this air travel bubble, right? It would have been one of the first early salvos to the recovery of air travel. IATA says 3 to 4 years. So this travel bubble was supposed to start on November 22nd, right? Obviously, single flight daily into each city, maximum of 200 passengers per flight. That's not going to rejuvenate aviation anytime soon, but at least it's a step in the right direction. Okay, 6:45 in the morning. We'll come back after this with some local news on social media. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Stray Cats with Baby Blue Eyes. Obviously not referring to either one of us, Shaunin, because we're Chinese and we don't have blue eyes. But be that as it may, it's the time of the day when we talk about the local news and some social media. But because nobody's talking to us, we're only going to be talking about local news. What have you got?
I've got the Malaysian Reserve yes. in front of me. And the headline is Review Cigarette Tax as Tourism and Retail Will Suffer More. And this is an article... because they've interviewed the Malaysian Budget Hotel Association chairman for Langkawi, and he says that this tax will affect sales and of budget, you know, hotels and retailers operating in these duty-free zones. But I'm not sure this really, to me, I agree, because is cheap cigarettes the only reason you go to Langkawi for?
No lah.
Don't you go for the beaches?
No, yeah.
I mean the nice hotels. It can't be just only the cigarettes that is the only incentive for you to go to Langkawi, right?
The bigger problem to that person who's been residing under a stone the last few months is COVID-19. The only reason why nobody's traveling is because of this thing called a virus. Anyway, in the forum page of the Edge Weekly, Dato Sri Nazir Raza, the former chairman and former CEO of CIMB, has written a very interesting op-ed, very honest, on the second page of the forum page. I won't go into the details, but suffice to say, it discusses the structural inefficiencies within the system. And none other than him, who's also the son of a former prime minister and also the former CEO of a big bank, number three bank in the country.
And also brother, right?
And former brother.
Yeah.
Still the brother, actually.
Yes, still the brother
of a former prime minister. Calling for structural reform. And it bears mentioning that some of the suggestions that he makes is worth having a look. So have a look.
Have a look.
Have a look.
Okay, I've got a little bit of cheerful news for us Malaysians because one of our directors has become a pride of the nation, and this is in the Star, page 8. I think the news came out over the weekend. So Malaysian homegrown talent Cheong Kiat On, named Best New Director at Taiwan's Golden Horse Awards, has been flooded with congratulatory messages from Malaysia. So another Malaysian who's done us proud on the global stage. Well done to him.
Hooray, hooray, hooray.
But are we doing enough for the local film industry? And is there one now with COVID-19?
Well, exactly, right?
In fact, a lot of challenges, right, when you do production work.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for a new Namwe movie over the weekend.
Well, isn't it banned?
Yeah, it's banned, so I shouldn't mention the word. But because things that are censored and controversial are not attractive to people, don't check it out, okay?
Don't check it out.
Which means you probably will.
I've also got another, moving on. I'm also looking at Star 2, page 2 of the Star Biz. And this part is interesting because we all know that COVID-19 is going to have a serious impact on real estate valuations. But so far, Malaysia, we've very, very seldom ever done impairments on any of these properties. And what impact will that have?
That's a good point.
Yeah, on the books.
That's a very good point.
Because for years, everyone assumes property is one nice straight line up, right?
They love to mark to market and then they love to report that asset
value. Yeah, so your book value jumps, everything book, you know, you're suddenly look more valuable as a company. But now, maybe you might actually start to see real serious impairments.
That's a big deal, especially for those companies with huge land bank. Yeah. What are you going to do, right?
I think even for the potential impact it will have on some of the REITs. Because REITs, if anything, they always value their books very regularly.
And I wonder whether the regulators will make it mandatory and step in and say, look, sort yourselves out. Okay, Malaysia Kitty, Tunku Razali. Tunku Razali, UMNO's Guam Musang MP, said he won't participate in the budget 2021 debate as long as Dewan Rakyat Speaker Azhar Art Harun refuses to allow a test of confidence on Muhyiddin Yassin's PM government. Now, he said this in a letter dated November 19th and criticised Art Harun's refusal to allow a no-confidence motion. That's very interesting. And that means there's probably going to be fireworks on I think, Wednesday, right? Parliament normally meets on Wednesday. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Very interesting times. And I'm referring to, very quickly, to an article in the Singapore Straits Times, because we always like to know what our neighbours are up to, talking about us for a change. Yeah, so it's an article written by Shannon Teo, who's the Malaysia Bureau Chief, and it's the title is Malaysia Land of the Young, led by Atoks and Abbas.
What does he mean by that? What's he on about, Shannon?
Shannon, yeah. Well, it's about the fact that, you know, we are a young population, but yet our leaders tend to be slightly of the older age. And what does that mean for us?
Obviously, we haven't done anything we haven't taken a leaf out of New Zealand's book.
Exactly. He uses
Sweden's
New
book.
Zealand as an example. Yeah. And he also cites a new Merdeka Centre survey, which said that 79% of those aged between 18 to 35 in Malaysia claim that the current political choices were too limited.
Well, I could have told him that, but obviously we need someone else to tell us that because the truth doth hurt. Okay, I'm just going to point out one more thing from the forum pages, the op-ed section of the Edge Weekly. Again, it is another op-ed. I think Tan Sri, it's actually Tan Sri now. Munir Majid, former SC chairman.
Yes.
Former Malaysian Airlines chairman as well.
Also,
he has a very interesting...
And also Chari.
Right. He's got a very nice op-ed on RCEP. Obviously, the new trade agreement that we've just inked, and that also bears mentioning because there's a lot of reforms and suggestions for the policymakers to make. Okay, 6:55 in the morning. We'll come back after this with a 7 a.m. news bulletin. Then after that, the numbers and figures. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.